You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where if you want to go to Final Tribal Council with us, we'll say goodbye, see you later, and cut you loose. As always, if you enjoy this show, be sure to check out our flagship program, Welcome to the Midside. You can find that on iTunes, subscribe there, it's on themidside.com, and pretty much wherever podcasts are streaming, it's streaming. Though, if you send me your obscure bullshit site that I've never heard of, it's not on there because I haven't had a chance to add it yet. Joining me this trip to discuss the most recent episode of Survivor Millennials vs. Gen X, via Skype, from a flyover state, Survivor superfan and founder of Facebook group previously on Survivor, founder and creator of it, the David Healy.
Hey, that's my Twitter name.
Well, isn't that from Rob Has a Podcast?
Well, I mean, I don't know that they call me the David Healy, but they mention my name on there sometimes. But oh. The David Healy happens to be my Twitter handle.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you were known as in the Survivor community. That's why I was calling you that.
I mean, they say, like, oh, you have a David Healy.
Right, so you are the euphemism for erection in the Survivor community.
Basically, yeah.
And how did that come about?
Okay, it came about when Parvati was doing a podcast for the first time on the show, and a ton of people were submitting questions for her, and I didn't really know what to ask her. But Parvati's a Survivor legend, so I wanted to say something. So I just said, hey, can you just have Parvati say my name? So, of course, they ask her to do it, and Nicole Sesternino instantly says, oh, he must have a boner now. So, yeah, that became a thing.
I think you got caught in the crossfire of a little cattiness there. That sounds like a little underhanded comment from Nicole Sesternino there.
Yeah.
But the irony of the comment is, you did not have a boner because...
Because Parvati doesn't do it for me.
And that is the funniest thing to me about that entire story.
Right. But nobody knew that then, so...
Yeah.
But what was ironic is that, like, the next several guests that would come on, there would always be one person saying, hey, can you say David Healy's name?
So how many survivors have said your name then?
I mean, on the podcast?
Yeah.
I remember Parvati, Holly Hoffman, Benry, as Sandra said my name. I know others have said it, but not in that same context.
So you are sort of like the... I just totally spaced on the name. The Walter White of the Survivor fan community. Say my name!
Yeah, I haven't watched that show.
Oh, okay.
Is that Breaking Bad?
Yeah, that was a Breaking Bad reference.
Yeah.
No
worries.
I'll
take your word for it.
Yeah. It's always great when your joke, your reference falls flat with your guest. But you told me something pre-show that I used in the introduction that I had no idea. You've created the group previously on Survivor, the Facebook group that's been, I mean, that's been the biggest Survivor fan Facebook group, right? I was involved with it for a while. I was able to actually go to events and meet survivors because of it. And you created it. I didn't know. I thought Mario and the infamous Big Mike created it. I didn't know it was you.
I mean, the three of us had like a round table discussion over Facebook back in, I guess, early 2010. I guess that's about right. Or was it 2011? It was early 2011. And we, as a group, decided we were going to start a new Facebook group. And then came the discussion, okay, who's going to do this? None of us wanted to do it because it was kind of born out of a lot of drama with another Facebook group. And we knew that whoever actually made this new group would get a lot of crap and get harassed. So I drew the short straw. I actually created the group. Big Mike gets credit for coming up with the name previously on Survivor, but I technically was the person who actually created it.
Oh, you're giving me a technicality here. You hit the create button.
I hit the create button. We as a group decided to do this.
So you're like the guy, if the president says nuke Iran, you're the guy who pushes the button and then you say, I nuked Iran.
Sure, but I mean, I wouldn't call Mike or Mario the president. I mean, it was a decision for all three of us. Mike came up with the name. So if you want to give credit to the name creator as the creator of the group, then sure, give it to Mike. I'm sure he would love to have credit for creating the group.
Well, I think you just pointed out all three of you deserve credit for creating it because, I mean, definitely. Mario is definitely well-known in the Survivor fan community. He was on the first episode here, and, you know, we've talked about his influence and his network in the Survivor fan community. So you all have a part in it. I mean, what you bring to it is you have a passion for the show, and you have a way of connecting with people and with players that I haven't really seen anybody else who's a fan connect in that way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you're friends now with Tasha, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm friends with Tasha.
Yeah, it's just normal. You know, I'm just friends with Tasha, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's other fans that have met more survivors than me, and that will go to more events than me. But yeah, I see where you're coming from. I don't know if I'm the only person like that who's actually like built friendships with survivor contestants.
Well, you're the one.
I'm sure
I know.
There's others. So, okay, fair enough.
I'm talking in my own experience. But so let's talk a little bit about this season. What'd you think of the most recent episode? Is there anyone who's revealed yourself as someone you want to be friends with, revealed themselves as someone that you want to be friends with this season?
You know what? I want to be friends with David, to name one. But sure, there's plenty that I'd be friends with. It's actually harder to name ones that I wouldn't be friends with or wouldn't be willing to be
whore.
Friends with.
Well,
I mean,
you friend whore.
Are we talking about good friends? Like, who would I hang out with consistently?
Yeah.
Or who would I be casually friends with?
No, I mean, okay, yes. You're a very nice person. You would be casually friends with most people. Yes, we know everyone loves you, the David.
Whatever.
Who would you want to be good friends with this season?
Who would I want to be good friends with this season? I mean, okay, I named David Wright first.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't, like, see myself hanging out with him consistently. I would just want to pick his brain and get to know him. We have the same name. I admire what he's done with his life, his career as a writer for television.
Did you see what shows he's written for?
I know Family Guy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what else.
That was the major one, was Family Guy, and he's just on something else now. But I looked him up on IMDb, and that's where he really got his start as Family Guy.
Right, yeah. But yeah, that's just something I would love to do personally. But I think, like, connecting as friends, definitely Michaela. Michaela's like my spirit animal. Her faces kill me. I think I'd get along with her really well. Also, probably Hannah. She's pretty quirky, and I don't know. I just feel like I would connect with her.
So, speaking of your love for black women, as we've established here, Tasha, Michaela, you know who I was disappointed with this episode? Is Cece. Because
yeah, I
loved her.
Say we're limited for options here, probably Cece.
Right. Well, no, I loved her over the first two episodes. She was so well spoken. But this episode, she's like, grammar? Fuck grammar.
Yeah,
like, where did her grammar go?
She's the most humblest person on the show.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like, seriously, she had perfect grammar the first two episodes, and then this episode was just like, no, my grammar is gonest.
The funny thing, though, is, like, when she was talking to the millennials and she called Ken the most humblest person, I'm like, okay, might have been a slip of the tongue. But then she goes back to camp, and she's like, Ken, I told them that you're the most humblest.
Yeah,
so,
the English teacher in me, the writer in me, was just, oh my god, do you not know how to use superlatives?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to fault her. She must have really thought he was humble if she had to say most and est.
I mean, I'm not how sure of it is actually him being humble in the sense that she means. Don't get me wrong. He's my favorite player this season, so I'm not talking shit about him at all.
Right.
But I think some of it is just his issues where he doesn't learn to connect with people and he kind of keeps to himself. That can come across as humble, because if you're a model, what do people usually expect of you stereotypically? They expect you to be super social and getting attention all the time. But I think the fact that he isn't, and he isn't like narcissistic and a braggart, makes him think, makes her think he's humble in the sense she means, which is like the super Christian sense of humble, where I think he's just like a normal person.
I can see where you're coming from. I do think he probably is a little bit more humble than the average good-looking person, just because he's experienced what it's like to be an outcast, to have a speech impediment, as he said. So I think going through that has let him see, I guess, both sides of the spectrum of what it's like to be an outcast and what it's like to be beautiful and popular.
That's what I mean. He's normal. It averages out.
Yeah, I guess so. Sure.
That's what we should all have. We should all have, like, shit we deal with, and then we should also have shit we're beautiful with, so we experience both extremes, so we're all just normal people. Normal,
yeah,
and healthy.
I mean, in an ideal world, I'm sure there's people that see the majority of one side or the other.
Did anything else stand out to you about this episode, just from an entertainment standpoint?
I mean, I'll just say that I'm pleased with the direction the season is going so far. I know a lot of people were underwhelmed with the season premiere, and I think episode 2 and episode 3 have been highly entertaining. So I like the direction it's going.
Really? Why do you find it to be highly entertaining? And I'm not saying I disagree with you, but that's quite a claim.
I think that there's, to a degree, an unpredictability factor to the season so far. The first boot was kind of straightforward. The next two boots were, there was an element of fun to them, I guess. Even if I was disappointed in Mari leaving, it was still fun to watch.
Yeah.
You probably disagree.
What? Well, I mean, no, I don't disagree. I think it's being edited in a very interesting way, and we'll get to that when we talk about the story in a second. I think they're actually to the point now they're just editing for the super fans. Because it seems like they're playing with the convention they set up over previous seasons. And I know, I agree. I was also disappointed Mari was voted out. I'm just glad that we are toppling the patriarchy. And finally a white male was voted out. None of this voting out the Asian women. I was sure. What's her
turn?
Name? Yeah, I thought it was Lucy's turn.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said about that. It's not just this season. If you look at the past 10 seasons or so, 10 or 15 seasons, consistently minority women are voted out first.
Well, look, it tends to be a show that has mostly white people on it, right?
Right.
So you tend to have experiences that are similar to your race. I'm not being racist, I'm being racial.
Oh, no.
That's the difference. So you're going to tend to want to be around people who are similar to you.
Exactly. I agree. I don't think it's overt racism. I think people are comfortable with people that are like them, and it's just kind of unfortunate for minorities who are on the show.
Yeah, I mean, so when you're talking about that, who are the other people you're referring to, like, the last few seasons? You're going to have more memorized than I am.
Right. I mean, Francesca comes to mind, Semhar,
Well, okay,
Nadia.
But to be fair about Francesca and Semhar, and Nadia, but here's the thing. I mean, maybe I'm just being a racist white guy, but, like, Francesca, like, she's very outspoken, and Semhor is just kind of out there, and
right.
Nadia is also very abrasive, too. Like, I didn't even like Natalie until Nadia was gone, because I found her to be very abrasive.
So you didn't like Natalie for one whole episode?
Well, yeah, because of how abrasive they were, and then, like, she was like, yeah, I'm going to align with Jeremy, who's awesome, and I was like, you must be awesome, too. I never loved her, but just the first episode, they were very abrasive. So,
okay.
I mean, it's interesting what you're saying, and I'm sure, you know, a feminist somewhere would say, oh, well, that's just because you find women speaking out to be abrasive. But I don't, though, because I fucking loved when Sophie was doing it, but now I just come across as racist. You hate when minority women do it, so I just proved your point.
I mean, I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but I think there is different cultural ways that different races interact.
Oh, certainly.
And yeah, and what you might call abrasive is probably just a cultural thing, and I don't find it as a bad thing personally. Like, I'm all about black women that are boisterous and outspoken. I love that.
See, personally. Black women who are outspoken hate me. I don't know why, but they hate me. Like, it's just like, it's just a thing. I don't get along with them, and I'm not racist at all. Like, I love strong people of any race. You know, I love Jeremy. I loved who was the guy? Was it Tyrone? Was his name on Nicaragua?
Tyrone, yes.
Yeah, he was awesome. I like Tasha. She's a great player. I like CeCe before. Like, I just can't like people who butcher the English language. But I liked her before that. So I don't know what it is.
So I bet you're a big Stacey Powell fan.
She was. Was she the one who went early? But then, like, after what season was she? Was she South Pacific?
She was in South Pacific. Yeah.
Yeah, she was a good player too. And the thing I liked about her, this is actually one of the times where I was able to like meet the cast. I was, you know, hanging out with people, and when she walked in, I noticed that she had gotten braces with the money that she won on the show. You get money for each way you place. And I was like, you know what? I have respect for that, because she used the money to improve herself.
Yeah, fair enough. That's cool.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the strategy of voting out Paul. What do you think of that move? Was that a good move? Was it a bad move?
I mean, I've listened to other podcasts this week, and overwhelmingly, everybody is saying this is a bad move for those girls, Jessica, Sunday, Lucy. But personally, I disagree completely with that. I think it was a great move for them.
Could you expound upon that? Why do you think it was that's it. This is a podcast, the David Healy. Okay. You can't get by on your erection on this podcast.
Right. Okay, here's my thinking. I can't help but go back to One World. You had Kim and her girls' alliance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Kim, the whole season, her thing that she kept going back to is she wants to have options in the game. Now, let's fast forward to this season where Paul, Chris, and Brett, they have options. They have these girls in their six-person alliance. They're going to get rid of CeCe. And then they have these guys that they can go to easily if they want to do an all-guy thing. And Paul made it clear, he probably didn't mean to, but he made it clear that if that option was something that the guys wanted to do, he would go along with it.
Yeah, I think that was the case, what you're referring to with him when he said that, was when you subconsciously think something that you're not even aware you're thinking, and you're not in control of yourself enough, and you let it slip.
Right. And I think that he was trying to be honest and thought he would get points. Like, hey, girls, if it comes up, I'll let you know. But if he had left it at that, that would be one thing. But he said, I'll let you know and say, ladies, you're on your own. That's a direct quote from him. Ladies, you're on your own.
Yeah.
Not, ladies, I'm still with you and we'll work it out. You're on your own. What's that supposed to make them think?
I know. That's why it's funny in his post-game interview on CBS.com. He tried to spin it like he would have stayed with them. It's like, no, it's pretty clear what you said.
Yeah. I mean, he has nobody to blame but himself for getting voted off.
Yeah, I mean, he stuck himself into a corner and he played his hand way too early. I mean, you can't be so definitive so early. Mm-hmm. I mean, if somebody comes to you with that question, you just have to be like, you know, I'm just playing with the people I like and get along with right now. I like you. I like them. There's no preference of gender. I'm not sexist. I can't give you that answer right now. I know I want to play with you, but maybe there's a tribe swap. Like, let's just play the next 3 days and see what happens.
Right, exactly.
Especially in today's day and age in Survivor, I think you can get... In the beginning, I think if you said that, people would have been like, oh, well, he's wishy-washy, get rid of him. But I think if you say that now, people are going to respect that a lot more.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
I do think Paul got points for his honesty, though. I just think he lost even more points for his complete lack of rhetoric.
Right, yeah. But there's another reason I think it was a good move. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Sunday who brought it up. It might have been Jessica. It definitely wasn't Lucy, because we don't hear anything from her.
I just want to know how Lucy has such gigantic boobs for an Asian.
You know what? I haven't noticed, so.
Continue.
But at Tribal Council, Jeff asked, I believe it was Sunday, like, why are you voting the way you're voting? And she said that she was voting basically for tribe unity. And I do think that getting rid of Paul is a great way to bring in the other three and say, hey, it's not really us versus you. We're a tribe. We're one tribe. Because it's such a dangerous game, like making your alliance so clear, letting the people on the outs know that they're on the outs. That's just so dangerous because we know swaps are coming. We know a merge is coming. And if you have these people on the fringe, what is keeping them on your side? So I think this helped kind of build a bridge with those three and say, hey, there's still potential for us to work together. The game's fluid. It's not so cut and dry.
And unfortunately, the damage has been done a lot with that already, where David's already ready to jump ship.
Right.
So maybe it helped Sunday out, but who knows if it helped the entire tribe.
Yeah. And that's a good point. The thing is, from their perspective, they don't know that David has gone out there already and made allies from the other tribe. So with their limited information, I think it was a good move.
Oh, yeah, I agree completely with your analysis. I was just saying it's unfortunate for her.
Right.
She's trying her best to play well, and somebody in her alliance that she had to vote out was playing so poorly that already she's behind the curve.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, if we're talking editing-wise, Sunday had a really good first episode edit and disappeared in episode two, and then you make a great point that they had her say that. That makes it seem like we're going to see more of her down the line.
Yeah, I think Sunday is going to be around for quite a while.
All right, so before we start talking about that, what about the strategy on the millennials side? Am I alone in thinking that it's a clusterfuck over there?
No, you're not. You're not alone in thinking that. I think it's so fun, though, because there's so many dynamics here. And there's so many directions it can go. So talking about the strategy there is a little complicated, but let's talk about it.
This is what I want to ask you, since you said you would want to be friends with Hannah.
Right.
How? Like, I get it. Like, she's quirky and she's weird. Like, okay, I get that. As, like, a quirky, weird person myself, I'm kind of, like, on board there. I get that. But then the way she let herself, like, get treated at Tribal, and then the way she was treating Zeke when Zeke was like, I just need some time. Like, at least Zeke was being clear. It's not like right. It was a conversation where Zeke was waffling and was leading her on. No, Zeke was very clear. We will talk later. I just need some time right now. But she still was more worried about the way she was perceived.
Yeah, she's very socially unaware, which I find that endearing about her, and I can understand why a lot of people wouldn't. But, like, honestly, when she kept trying to talk to Zeke, I was cracking up because I could not believe how oblivious she was to the situation. He wasn't saying, I'm never talking to you again. I'm mad at you. He was saying, just let's not talk about it right now. So I was cracking up. And
I think yelling. I was like, shut up. You're hurting yourself. Because, like, I'm empathetic. I want, like, the players to do well. So it's just like, stop. You're damaging your game more than the vote did.
I mean, I feel like if nothing else, we got a good contender for the funny 115 4.0.
That's true. Yeah. Don't tell Mario that, though. He's still in the 3.0 right now. Let's not rush
it. I know. He doesn't want to stress out about that. But, I think that I would have liked to see their conversation the next day because I can't imagine that Zeke would have been angry. So, well, at least visibly angry. And he's a big fan of the show. So surely he would give her a chance to talk and mend fences as quickly as he could. We saw Adam doing that.
Well, right. And that's the other thing about strategy wise, Adam versus Zeke is I'm sure Adam was mad too. But I thought Adam handled the strategy better. You have to be able to recognize who you're talking to. And if you're talking to someone like Hannah, you have to recognize that she's socially unaware. And for a second, you have to say, okay, it's not that my feelings don't matter. It's that I'm playing a game. If that's real life, I'm 100% with Zeke. I'm 100%. Leave me alone. I need to cool down.
Uh-huh.
But because it's a game, just swallow your feelings for a couple seconds and say, you're not the bad guy. I understand why you did it. I forgive you. And just let her talk, because she's not interested in hearing what you have to say. Let her talk, and once she finishes talking, then you can be alone. That's going to do more for your game than pushing her away.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think it's safe to say neither of them handled the situation very well.
From a strategy standpoint, yes.
Right.
And Hannah didn't handle it well socially either.
Right, exactly. But I actually think that Will is going to be kind of the clinchpin here. I'm sure that Michaela and Hannah will rationally see why they need to work with Adam and Zeke. I'm not convinced Will see a good argument for that.
Yeah, it's hard to know when he's so young and they're calling these people the popular kids. He may just want to fit in. So I think you're right that that's kind of, I mean, this, the whole season may revolve around him for all we know. So we'll see with that.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting when Taylor was saying that the three people going with him to this summit were the three people closest to him. And Will was one of those people. And Michelle was not one of those people. So I thought that was pretty telling.
Yeah, I mean, Michelle's interesting because she wasn't in the first episode. She was in the third, wasn't in the third episode, but she was in the second. So yeah, it's kind of like, what's
the deal
with her?
She was very important in the second episode.
Yeah. Well, that was out of nowhere, too. Like, it wasn't foreshadowed her being a strategist at all.
Right.
And now she's not in it at all this time. So it's sort of like, why are they building her up that way? What's her purpose? You know, that you think they would try and do something about her being paired with, what's the other guy's name, Jay?
Right.
She has
a boyfriend.
Jay?
It is Jay.
So that's why they're not even going that way with the edit or anything?
Because she has a boyfriend, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she, in preseason videos, she was saying that she's going to keep that a secret, and she's not going to be afraid to flirt.
Yeah, so that would lead to the edit. So it's very strange. She has a very strange edit.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a reason for it. I mean, I think that goes more to the story. And I don't know if we're ready to talk about
that. Go ahead.
Okay.
That's how this works, David. A little behind the scenes here for everyone out there. I just naturally led the conversation in that direction.
Oh, well, good job. It worked. I believe that Michelle is not going to have a big story for the season. I think that in episode 2, it was necessary that we saw what was going on because she was so crucial in getting those votes. And so they had to show that.
Well, it also, to lead with what you're saying, I was kind of thinking something similar. She might be the first one to go in a swap. Maybe post-swap, somebody's like, oh yeah, she was the ringleader for our one tribal council, and that gets people to vote her out. If Zeke and Adam end up with a lot of the Gen Xers and her, the two of them might flip on her because of that, and that could be the reason. Maybe that's why they put it in there.
Very true. But do they know that it was Michelle?
I would venture they know her personality and they know what she's doing. It's very hard to hide who you are.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean,
true.
Adam and Zeke are both super fans as well.
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest mystery of the whole edit on the Millennial Tribe is Mari seemed to be like we seemed to have two masterminds on that tribe, Mari and Michelle. But Mari was edited in a way that she seemed completely oblivious to anything that was going on. So did they know she was the one in charge or not? I mean, because really, you have to know Taylor and Figgy aren't leading things, right?
Oh, definitely not. But I don't... I mean, Mari was oblivious, but I personally don't think she did anything wrong. I think that her game fell apart because of Zeke and Adam telling Jay about the vote, that they were going to vote out Figgy. So I'm not to go too far down that rabbit hole. Like, I don't discredit Mari's game for being unaware of what was happening.
I think her personal mistake was lack of aggression combined with what you're saying. She kind of didn't get... She's the kind of person who, as I said, she's the mastermind. And what I mean by that is not necessarily the one pulling the strings, but the leader figurehead type. That's I mean, if you look at everyone on the Millennial Tribe, she's one of the most successful people on it, right? She's done things in reality. She's actually accomplished things. So she's naturally going to be a person people look to as a leader. But as we even saw in the edit, Zeke is kind of filling that void. And because of that, she didn't get her alliance sort of under her wings, and that let Zeke and Adam do what you said they did, and that let Hannah, you know, do what Hannah did.
Right.
So I think it's a combination of that. I think she didn't want to come across as too, like, controlling, but, you know, when she has clearly the intelligence and the ability, if there's one thing Boston Rob taught us, with that kind of personality, that's the game you have to play, right? Anyone who's had that personality, that's the game they play. I mean, Kim played that game in one world. She couldn't have played any other game. It wouldn't have worked for her.
No, you're right.
But editing-wise, when we're talking about Zeke being the leader, his edit so far has been one about transformation, right? I talked about last week with George on episode 2 about he has a very similar edit to Cochran in Caramon. Is that how you say it?
Caramon, yeah.
Yeah, he had a very similar edit to Cochran in Caramon. And I noticed this week that David's getting the same edit on the Gen X tribe.
Yeah, for sure. He even said it last week. He's more of an Aussie, or more of a Cochran than an Aussie.
Right. So Cochran's really being hit hard in the edit this season. We've seen other seasons where Boston Rob was brought up a lot. There have been other players that have been brought up on other seasons. But this season seems to be the influence of Cochran. And I'm not sure what that means exactly. Do you have any ideas?
It makes sense because we have a lot of super fans this season. I mean, we have on the Millennials alone, we have Adam, Zeke, Will. They're all huge fans of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the direction they were probably willing to open up this season, like have a bunch of Cochran Spencers. So I can understand why the story is kind of naturally making that development.
And I think even Chris on the Gen X tribe is a super fan, isn't he?
He might be. I'm not sure if he is.
He comes across as one, and so does Brett. So they all come across as super fans to me, but maybe I'm just jaded at this point. I think they're all super fans.
No, they could be. I don't think of too many Gen Xers as super fans of the show, but then again, I've met quite a few Gen Xers that are super fans. And
I was going to say, that's racist, the David Healy. That is racist. So racist.
Yeah. I mean, they're a different type of super fan generally.
I mean, Mario's a Gen Xer. We talked about that at length in the first episode.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right.
And you're almost one.
I, according to Jeff Probst, do not have a generation. I addressed that in the first episode.
No.
Gen X ends in 82, and Millennial begins in 84, according to Jeff Probst. So those of us in 83, I understand that he was just saying that because that's the age group of the players on the show. 83 was originally like, it's been interesting with the whole millennial thing. In the beginning, it wasn't really considered millennial my age, but as millennials become more and more of a thing, they've expanded the range upwards and I've become a millennial.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like growing up, I never thought of myself as a millennial.
Yeah.
I remember going to, my youth group at church and they were talking about Gen X and they were like referring to us as Gen X. And I'm 31. So like, I haven't really related to Gen X either because I realized I was on the bubble of that. I've thought of myself as Gen Y, but, and I've heard the term millennials, but I've never thought of myself as a millennial until like Jeff Probst is talking about 31-year-old Mari being a millennial. I'm like, hey, what does that make me?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, if you look at Mari, she legitimately has a millennial job, stereotypically, right? She's the cute Asian girl who plays video games for a living. That's like millennial stereotype.
Right.
But for me, you know, being born in 83, I'm 33. I don't feel like a millennial completely because I remember a time before computers and smartphones and the internet. I remember getting AOL in middle school. I remember being excited to go to college because it was a LAN connection and super fast. And I was like, oh, I can download music very quickly right. on this. These kids have always grown up with their smartphones and everything. So the divide is very interesting. But it's also interesting in the way it manifests in the edit. Because the question is, do you have to embody your tribe or be more of a balance? Because in the first, you know, the first vote, it wasn't very clear. But if we look at the votes since, Mari's edit was very, like, she was voted out because she was a millennial, right? She saw it as a game and she couldn't empathize with people. Whether that was what actually happened, that was the way it was edited. And the same thing with Paul. He was, in this episode especially, edited very much as a Gen Xer. Of, I'm the dad, and I'm in control, and I work hard, therefore I'm going to win. And both of those were shown to be downfalls for those people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're not seeing these people play as organically as they would in another season. I think it's, since they have this label on them, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Where their mentality has shifted, like, oh, this, I'm Gen X, I have to be what a Gen X is. I have to prove the Gen X is the best generation.
Right, which is interesting because in Survivor, there's a history of if somebody says they're not part of a group, it's usually an indicator of them going far or winning. You know, we saw this with Ethan in Africa where he was like, I'm surrounded by people all the time and I still feel alone. Like, that was a clue he was going to win. We haven't really seen that many people do that yet. I'd say the only two people we've seen have comments like that yet are David and Zeke. And again, we come back to David and Zeke.
Right. I mean, David and Zeke are clearly going to be two of the bigger characters this season. Notwithstanding the first three episodes, I'm sure that they're in it for the long haul. We're going to see them for quite a while. And the edit has made it clear.
But that's what's interesting about the edit, is didn't it seem like Mari and Paul were being set up traditionally as long-term players?
I agree with Mari. Like, her leaving so early was very shocking for me, because I felt momentum for her story.
Yes.
Paul, we've seen characters like Paul that fizzle out pretty quickly, so it didn't really surprise me as much.
Yeah, I guess I just was thrown off. They did a lot of, like, rebirth stuff with what after his injury. When he came back from being dehydrated, he had a couple quotes about, like, I feel like I'm starting over, and I feel like a rebirth.
Yeah.
And usually, symbolically in a story, that, you know, is very good.
Right. And we're getting that rebirth with David. He talked about how he's a new person after meeting up with the millennials.
Yeah.
And so I think that what you might have expected to see from Paul, we're going to get with David. I think it's very clear he's at least making a tribe swap.
So you just actually jarred something in my mind. Maybe the point of the season isn't being millennial or Gen X or being balanced, but as you just said, people have this self-fulfilling prophecy. Maybe it's about the person who best overcomes the label and becomes more than that and just plays the game.
Oh, definitely.
That works with the transformation thing as well.
Right. And that's been my thought pretty much this whole season. I think that the person that is going to do the best in the game and win is going to be somebody who doesn't let themselves get into a box with their tribe, with their initial tribe, and somebody who can cross boundaries, show that they're versatile with millennial and Gen X. And I think we've seen one person that clearly is demonstrating that.
Are you going to claim David or Zeke?
Neither.
Ken?
Yes.
I mean, he's my favorite dude. Like, I want him to win, but he was just absent in episode one.
No, he was not absent in episode one. I think he had a very important part in episode one.
Okay, I want to hear this. I'm open to this.
We get to the Gen X camp, and immediately they start going on their Gen X tirade again, talking about millennials, and who steps up to defend the millennials and say, hey, we can't count them out.
Interesting. Okay. That could have been his subtle winner moment in the first episode.
I believe it is. Like,
don't give me hope!
No, I'm not trying to, but I feel very confident in Ken because I can't find anybody else.
Well, I do think there are some characters that have potential, and I have sort of a list. I mean, David and Zeke are on there.
Right.
I'm more confident about Zeke than I am David. I also think Chris has a very interesting edit.
Yeah.
And I would think those would be my main three. Maybe an outside shot of Brett, but he doesn't have much of a story. But Chris, David, and Zeke have good stories. And you just made a great case to add Ken to that list because I kind of felt he was missing from episode one. But that is a great moment you point out. And those moments can be so important in Survivor editing.
Right. And I think we've gotten a few of those moments from Ken as well. I mean, you think about seasons where a contestant is like going on a trek by themselves, like climbing up a mountain, and you have a helicopter shot of Yule or Earl.
Or Cochran. That was Cochran's whole thing when he was rock climbing, and I'm a different person now.
Yeah, we've gotten that from Ken already, except he was fishing. We got the same narrative as we saw him out there fishing, and it just screamed winner to me.
Well, and that's also interesting because if we're talking about like David's doing what Paul couldn't, it was also interesting how Ken the whole episode was calling out Paul and being like, oh, he fishes all the time. How many fish has he caught? And then Ken goes out there and doesn't he catch a fish?
You know what? I can't remember if he did catch a fish or not. Possible.
But the fact that they would even edit that in there and then have Paul get voted out is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're killing me, dude. Like, if he wins, he's going to be like one of my favorite winners. He's such a good character, and he's so smart. And so, like, I like people who are the well-rounded people. Like, I like people who are smart, rational, healthy, and, like, good-looking. Like, I like the full package.
Right. And I think you're not alone. I would say that Ken is probably the fan favorite at this point.
Interesting. Well, fans out there who think I don't represent the norm, I do. So let me ask you one final question here. Would you say he's the fan favorite in general fandom or in like the super fan internet fandom?
I would say both.
That honestly never happens.
Yep.
Who, there's not like they don't love Lucy or something?
Oh yeah, Lucy has her like underground fans.
of course she does.
Who like her ironically?
Ah, she's the hipster favorite.
Yes, basically.
And then Zeke isn't the most popular. I would have thought the internet fans love Zeke.
You know, I think Zeke is pretty popular. I think that we still need to see more from Zeke. He needs to have a big moment. I don't think we've had a big moment.
Well,
we
the saw fire him make thing fire. Was
yeah,
big,
we
yeah.
saw him make the fire, but I'm sure he has something else coming.
I think Zeke's big moment is to come. I really
yeah.
do.
I think another big fan favorite is Michaela.
Interesting.
And that might just be my personal bias because I love Michaela, but I've definitely seen that a lot of people love her reaction. She's very gifable or gifable, however you say it. She's brutally honest.
You can throw peanut butter at her.
Yeah, I loved it when Figgy was trying to make up with her so they could take out Mari, and Michaela's like, this girl's trying to work with me now? She says that right to her face.
No, she's, look, someone like that, she's very amusing. But I just, like, I can't fucking like someone who it's like you vote with someone and then insult the person you're voting with at Tribal when you could just vote that person out.
You know, there's something admirable about it, though. That she can get past. She can get past her personal feelings for Figgy and vote out the person who is giving power to somebody who's targeting her.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but yeah. I talked about this with Mario in the first episode. Personal feelings and the way you interact with people play a much bigger part in the game of Survivor than people would like to admit.
Oh, they absolutely do, which, like, that's why I thought, wow, Michaela can get past her personal feelings, because now she knows Zeke is targeting her, and she can get past that, the conflict with Figgy and vote out Mari.
Well, there you go. There is the perspective of the David Healy. It's always a unique and interesting perspective. It always adds. You've definitely deepened my understanding of the season. And I have to ask, though, before we leave, are there clowns sneaking in and out of your room?
No, I have my friend is visiting me for the week, so he's been in and out of my room.
Ah,
And
okay.
I was like making a face saying, "Hey, I'm recording something right now, so be quiet." But yeah, that was my door opening and shutting.
Yeah, I thought maybe we found the source of the clowns in America.
Yep, the clowns. I am the master clown. Oh, and can I just say one more thing? We haven't really talked about the person who's my personal favorite this season.
Oh, I thought it was Michaela. Go
No,
ahead.
I love Michaela, but she's not my favorite.
Who's your favorite?
Adam is my favorite.
And is he the one you would most want to be friends with?
Yeah, I didn't even think about him. I would definitely be friends with Adam.
So you have to do something for me when you become friends with him. You have
Okay.
to, I bring this up every episode. You have to ask him why he decides to yell in confessionals.
I mean, he's already made fun of himself on Twitter for that. He's like, "I'm going to live tweet using all caps in honor of my yelling confessionals."
Well, good. That will add to the Funny 115 entry that eventually happens in Funny 115 4.0. I already
Right.
gave that to Mario. I said, there you go, you have an entry.
I think he probably didn't realize that they can hear him just fine without him yelling. So it's just another endearing quality. Like anytime he's giving a confessional, I'm smiling because he just has like this joyful look. Like when he went to tribal council and was just smiling in awe, I just like that made my heart warm.
Well, there you have it. Adam, Michaela, these are d the David Healy's favorites for this year. We'll see how they go.
Yes.
He's laid down an interesting theory and defense for Ken, which I am all for, and I think it fits with the edit, and I think so far it's the best case, although we all know I don't think it's really safe to pick winner picks anymore because of the editing has been inconsistent as of late. So as we sign off here, David, is there anything you want to plug? Where can people find you? That kind of stuff.
I mean, you're always welcome to join previously on Survivor if you aren't a member there.
Make sure when you do, though, you mention that JML sent you there. That'll go over
Yeah.
really well.
Oh, yeah. They love JML.
And then where else can they find you? Twitter, Snapchat?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, the David Healy. I'm on Snapchat if you want to add me, David L. Healy. That's H-E-A-L-Y.
It's not L like David E L Healy, like David the
No.
Healy.
No, it is for my middle name, Lewis.
Ah, well, there you go. You've also learned something about the David
Yep.
Healy here today. Maybe you can get someone on Rob Has a Podcast to say David Lewis Healy, and it'll be a new era in Survivor
Oh, that
fandom.
would just be bizarre.
And if you enjoyed our show here this week, check out the, as I said at the top, the main show, our flagship show, Welcome to the Midside on iTunes and wherever podcasts are streaming. You can also follow us on Twitter, on Instagram. There we have our Facebook page. And also, I run our Snapchat, so you can see things like me ranting about political ads that I am sent in the mail here in California. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and this concludes your journey into the Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.